Hello, and welcome back to the Dungeons & Dragons Podcast UK. My name is Yasmin, and I will be the DM.
Hi, my name is Samantha. I play Laura Greyvale, and she is a sorceress from the province of Nevalia.
Hello, I'm Colin, and I play Cuin de Greymont, a paladin from Flarben in the province of Gavinny.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I play Ogvar Shawfort, a goat-herding, mushroom-seeking ranger from Kessig.
Hi, I'm Rick, and I play Otto, a spring sage from Hanwyr, sworn to the land, wandering the plain and setting wrongs to right with his ursine companion, Bojo.
We are slowing the proceedings a bit, as we have a few housekeeping matters to address before we rock on with episode 114. So, what is on the housekeeping agenda this time? Firstly, we would like to say how glad we are to have our DM back after her bout of whatever lurgy it was she was harbouring, and also to wish Ryan a speedy recovery from COVID, which scuppered this week's recording session for us too. As you can tell, it's all been going swimmingly here at Podcast HQ. Next, in case it had escaped anyone's notice, it was my birthday the week before last. Another personal level up for me, and a whole heap of awesome people extending birthday sentiments. So, without further ado, I would like to thank the following folk. AD&D Steve, Lance Moth Hutchings, Jeff Altman, Ian Forward, Derek Taylor, Martin Shuttleworth, Hannah Jade Britcher, Simon Powell, Paula Martin, Eddie Jonas, Lee Edwards, Eric Hopper, Ian Bonar, and everyone on the crew, and I am genuinely hoping that I did not miss anyone out. Thank you all so much. Lastly, but certainly not least, exclusive things are afoot in the next few episodes as we acknowledge and celebrate some amazing composers who have generously allowed us to use their work. To Travis Savoy, who brings our podcast to life each week, and to Quincas Moriera for allowing us to use his version of Carol of the Bells, and to the esteemed and incredible talent that is Mark Petrie. If you are not familiar with his name, then you will certainly be familiar with his film trailer work. The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, Avengers Infinity War and Endgame, Venom, Deepwater Horizon, Guardians of the Galaxy, Life of Pi and Independence Day Resurgence, the list literally goes on and on. We would like to extend our extreme appreciation to Mark for generously allowing us to feature his composition of God Rest You Merry Gentlemen. It will without doubt immerse us all in the spirit of the season. You can find Mark's music on Spotify, YouTube and Bandcamp, and you can find links to each of these three musical masterminds in our episode bio. Right, I think this covers everything for now, except to say that we wish you all a fabulous festive season. Now, it's on with this week's much-awaited episode. As everyone bumbled into the basement, it was an aggressive arachnid that instigated a showdown throwdown with the team as it moved to strike first. Ogvar and Otto violated its view on proceedings, and between them they distinctly disadvantaged the hairy squatter. Next, it was Allura that stepped up, with an unyielding bubble of double trouble in a fine and damaging display of what goes up must indeed come down. However, as we last left, our heroes were beginning to feel the fanged fiend was the warm-up act, a prelude in preparation for the rather ominous pall of smoke tumbling its way down the staircase toward them. Episode 114, Malicious Mist and Pious Projectiles.
It's the end of last session, Otto, Ogvar and Allura. Accompanied with a feeling of being watched, you spot a black mist rolling down the staircase. What are you doing?
Immediately on guard.
Guys? What? What is that? What is that thing? What is that?
We don't know.
What's what?
Anybody? Esther, do you know what that is?
And everyone can roll initiative.
Well, this is why I didn't want to come here in the first place.
Roll initiative. Yeah, right.
Kulin gets 19. That's 17 plus 2.
Okay.
Laura is an 8 plus an 8, so that's 16 all in for initiative.
Okay.
Carry on, mate.
So Otto rolled 10 plus 1 for a total of 11.
Okay.
And Ogvar rolled a 14 plus a 4, which is 18.
Nice. Okay. So let me just get the numbers in on my end. And
I didn't like the word numbers.
Esther rolls 17 plus 4 for 21. So, top of the pecking order, Esther. Looking, turning round quickly to see what the great fuss is about. Esther takes a look. That does look like a bit of a gaseous form, dearie.
I don't like the look of it.
Okay. So, next up in the round, Kewin.
I don't know. But it wasn't me. Gaseous form. How far away is it from me then?
It is roughly 120 foot away from you.
Kewin's gonna move up to the second pedestal or
five,
column.
10.
Okay, so you move up. You're roughly about where this where Fluffy's corpse is. So Fluffy's corpse will be on the kind of ground in front of you kind of area. Okay, is that your entire turn? Are you doing anything else?
Mother's nothing else can do, so.
Okay, no items you want to activate, no blessings, nothing. Okay.
Nope.
Okay. So, next up we have Ogvar.
Okay, Ogvar will move across the room slightly, 30, to be behind or poking round the pillar opposite Kewin, and sort of just to see what's going on, because he probably couldn't see round Kewin, and say, you, whoever, whatever you are, what are you doing?
Okay. Anything else you're doing on your turn?
Just waiting for a response, really.
Okay. So, next up, Elora.
Right. Can I make it as far as where Ogvar has gone?
No, you won't be able to make it that far.
Okay. Who's next to me, then? Who's directly next to me?
So, Esther and Otto are near you. They're congregated towards the foot of this like dismantled bed.
Right, I think Elora would she doesn't know what Otto's capabilities are, having just met him. So, right, she's going to scoot the 10 foot over to Esther, who is to her left. She is going to reach out her index finger, and she's going to draw. The index finger is going to light up, and she's going to draw a circular motion in the air vertically, and then she's going to reach out and touch Esther's shoulder. In doing this, she's going to say, "To enter persona maxus," and you will see the little glow of light come off a finger and go onto Esther's clothing on her shoulder, and it will get dimmer as it soaks through her clothing and disappears. She is casting Mage Armor Greater on Esther that will give her a +6 to her AC for the next 90 minutes.
Okay.
She's then going to turn her attention back to the defenestrating sphere that is sitting around, and she is going to move that sphere 30 foot towards this tumbling mist, directly towards it. And then she will leave it parked there.
Okay, so 30 foot towards this tumbling mist is probably going to put you somewhere in the middle of the room between the second pair of columns.
Over towards the stairs.
Yeah, roughly where you were pinned down by the spider's web. Okay, so Esther kind of, she murmurs a very soft thanks to you. And yeah, you move your sphere. Are you doing anything else on your turn?
No, that's it. She's had her movement because she moved the sphere and she's cast a spell and that is it.
Okay, can you move the 10 foot as well as move your sphere?
Oh shit, no I can't. No, okay, the sphere would have to go back, so yeah, retcon that. Just leave the sphere where it was previously, sorry, because that would have been her movement, yeah.
Okay, so next up, Otto. What are you doing in this situation?
I'm feeling a little under threat by this. We're still in a location Otto's not familiar with. So Otto is going to briefly kneel on the ground, summoning some of the powers that the land has given him, and ask Innistrad to protect him. And as he does so, he's casting Luminous Armour, which will enrobe him in a suit of dazzling full plate, completely weightless, but offering some degree of protection. It would also illuminate the area massively, equal to a daylight spell. There's a 60-foot radius of bright light and a 60-foot radius of dim light. Additionally, even that light is enough to reduce and hinder my opponent's attacks. And so enrobed in that light, he'll step into the centre of the room, moving about 20 feet, getting ready to engage whatever threat is appearing. And that'll be his turn.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
It's a second level spell that is very strong, but it comes at a cost that he will pay later.
Nice. Okay. Cool. So Otto's lit himself up and then strode boldly forth into the middle of the back end of the room. And you are providing, obviously, the shadows which were being cast by Kieran's bolts in the ceiling have been further chased away, and practically the entire room is fully illuminated now. And you almost seem to see the shadow pulling down the stairs almost kind of hiss and roll backwards a little as your daylight spreads. Okay, is that the end of your turn?
That is the end of Otto's turn.
Okay, nice. So, the roiling mass of black smoke at the foot of the stairs slowly pulls into the room further. Moving forwards about 20 feet, and you can see this is just a mass of roiling smoke. It's suspended in the air and it floats forwards just ominously. There's no sound. It's just this slow, rolling, floating mass. Next up, top of the round, Esther. Now imbued by your spell, Elora, Esther will move forwards to join Otto towards the centre of the room. She, as she does so, she draws her blade, this long, blood-red tinted longsword, from its sheath. And the red edges are highlighted quite gruesomely in Otto's luminous, the light from Otto's luminous armour. Almost seeming to kind of shine iridescent, looking like it's already been wetted. Next up, Kieran.
Kieran's which he should have done before, but I weren't taking the hint, I had something else on mind, is going to cast Divine Favour on himself.
Okay.
And he's going to fire his crossbow, which is now reloaded because he uses his second turn to reload it, and fire blankly, admittedly, into the aperture that is opened on by the stairs.
Okay. So you fire off a bolt and you follow the bolt's path quite closely. You see it fly true towards the centre of this roiling mass, and the smoke parts around it, leaving it to fly clean through and clatter against the wall behind.
Well, the first time I've seen that.
Well, that's not sporting, is it?
Are you a...
Shit.
Are you 100% sure there is nothing else available to you that you wish to use?
Everybody's just laughing.
I could... Well, I don't think the roasting spit's going to be much good.
The what?
The roasting spits.
Or the manacles.
Stunning.
Okay, no, if you think about it, if you remember it, let me know. Okay, so is that the end of your turn?
That's the end of my turn.
Okay, Ogvar, you're up next.
Ogvar is still half unsure and half scared of what's going on.
Okay.
Yeah, so... I think at the moment he is just going to shout out again, you cloud of smoke and mist, what are you? What do you want?
Okay. Is there anything else you're doing on your turn, or is that are we leaving?
He's probably just going to slip one hand into his backpack and just get his hand on something ready for next turn if he needs it.
Okay, nice. So, Elora, you're up next.
First thing she's going to do is she's going to move the defenestrating sphere into the space. Oh, she can't get it that far. She's going to move it 30 foot towards this mass of roiling smoke.
Okay, nice. That will be enough to actually make contact.
Oh, okay.
Just about, but it will be enough to make contact. So,
okay.
Roll. That's a magical effect. Yeah. Okay, so roll to hit. What checks need to be made here?
Okay, so to roll to hit, I have got to roll a d12. Well, I've got to. Got to roll to hit, so I should do that now.
Do you have to roll to hit, or is it a will set a fortitude save that needs to be done?
No, I have to roll to hit initially.
Okay.
So that will be a 17 plus 8, so that would be a 25 to hit.
25 to hit, yes, that will hit.
Okay. There is on a hit. Hang on, bear with me. I just need to double check. I think I've got this right. Right. As the sphere strikes it, it initially takes 3d6 points of damage.
Okay.
Which I shall roll now. So that will be 12 points of damage initially.
12 points initially, okay.
Ordinarily, depending on the creature, it will have to make a fort save to avoid going prone, but obviously this isn't something that can fall prone, so I assume it will automatically succeed on that save.
Yes, it will.
Right, so if it doesn't go prone, that's it.
Hang on a sec, let me just check on this one. Doesn't actually say, which is quite odd. One second, let me check on that one.
This is one of those weird effects, isn't it? Because the type of creature that you're hitting, it hasn't got a material at this current point in time. It doesn't have a material body.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was saying. You know, everything I've got, it sinks.
Yeah, well, it's non-material, isn't it, at this point in time?
I know how other editions rule it, but I don't know about this one. So I'll see what Yaz says on this one. I don't feel like it's confident weighing in here.
So if it doesn't go prone, it can't be swept up. If it can't be swept up, it can't take any further damage.
Well, if it's gas, it's a gaseous form, so that you can blow that about.
Well, it might blow it about, but his arrow just parted it, so it's only going to, in theory, regather itself.
Coalesce,
that's it.
You can blow it up the chimney, though.
Yeah, that's it.
Bye bye.
Up the chimney.
Or out the window. Ogvar knows all about going out windows. Do you want to know about going out your windows? He's your man.
Which is where Defenestrated Sphere came from.
He followed you.
I'd argue it. Elora is the expert on going out of windows. She's seen it in more times than anyone else, I think.
I'm getting nothing, actually, which is odd.
just make your own DM ruling on it. What effect would it have, if any? If it has no form, then that's pretty much as far as it goes, as far as from Elora's point of view.
Well, this is the thing, because it's insubstantial.
Yes.
So technically, nothing will hit it, but it is vulnerable to magic. So, okay.
Well, then, in theory, then it would take the initial hit and that would be it. If it's insubstantial, then...
So what
nothing else can happen to it.
Yeah, I suppose so. What I'm going to say from this is your orb, as it rolls forward,
it's a violently swirling sphere of air, if you want the actual description.
Yes, no, what's it called? I've forgotten.
Defenestrating sphere.
That's the badger. So your defenestrating sphere, as it rolls forwards, makes contact with just the edge of this black fog, this black mist, and pretty quickly you see the mist itself sucked up into the swirling mass of air, turning it this kind of inky black colour.
Can I ask another question?
Yes.
Is this hovering off the floor, or is it on the floor?
It's in the general area.
So the sphere is 2 foot. If it's higher than 2 foot off the deck, it won't hit it.
No, it's in the area. It's boiling around. It's
okay.
It will make contact.
Okay.
Okay. So your sphere makes contact and it begins to kind of churn this fog around, and pretty quickly, much like when you put food colouring in, like a batter mix in a blender, you see it begin to kind of assimilate and turn the entirety of your defenestrating sphere black as it roils internally. So what else are you doing? Is that the end of your turn?
That was just my movement.
Okay.
I think she... I think she will... Who's next to her? Is there anybody within... No, there's nobody directly within range of her at the moment. Only Rowan. She is going to imbue... Rowan. Oh. No, she's not. What's she going to do?
Please don't use any grease on the floor.
No. She is going to reach inside her backpack. No, because that's a move action. Is that a free action or a move action?
You can take that as a standard action.
Right, so as a standard action, she's going to shuffle around inside her backpack really quickly, and she is going to pull out a couple of potions and put them into her pockets.
Okay, and that's the end of your turn.
And that is all she's doing. Yep,
okay.
That's the end of my turn.
So next up, Otto.
Otto's a little unsure of what this is. He doesn't feel safe. At the same time, he doesn't feel secure in being the one to cause this thing to get angry. He's going to simply stand ready, his staff held close, and is considering some options. He'll simply... effectively, he'll fight defensively for the turn, just in case.
Okay, nice. Right.
And that will be his turn.
Okay, so, next up, I'm going to make a... strength check. Laura, what is your casting modifier? What is your what skill do you use to cast? Is it charisma?
It is.
Okay, can you roll me a charisma check, please?
A straight charisma check.
Or actually, one second. Do you have a spell save DC for that spell?
The spell will be DC of 18.
Okay. So we're gonna make a resistance check against that one. And let's see. 8 plus. Okay. So on its turn, this black fog, you see it thrash violently inside your defenestrating sphere. And when I say thrashing, I mean you can see almost your sphere deforming with the strength of its thrashing.
Has the whole of it gone into the defenestrating sphere? Has the whole thing been sucked into it?
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
You see it violently thrashing, almost breaking the bounds of the sphere. I mean, it is like something is trying to claw or tear its way out of it. I mean, the sphere deforms immensely before snapping back into its original spherical shape. Clearly, the creature inside unable to overcome the strength of your magic. Next up, we have Esther. Esther will come up towards and walk up level towards you, Qin, looking over her right, kind of looking across to you, just checking that you're ready, and she gives you a nod and a bit of a shaky smile, so to speak. And you can see her grip on her blade is tight, and she's ready to spring into action. Okay, so next up, Qin.
Qin. He's going to cast Wanderer Ward on himself, and Ogvar. I suppose he better do a Laura as well.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, I mean, it's no good trying to turn undead or rebuke undead because it's stuck in it. It's stuck in a ball. So the ball, therefore, has control. So.
Well, it's okay. Some kind of magical barrier, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's like.
Okay, so that's the end of your turn. Right, so next up we have Ogvar. What are you doing?
Would it be obvious that, or would Ogvar know that if he attempted to launch a projectile of some description at the mass in the sphere, would it, like, so if we chucked like a potion or a thing or a stuff, would it have any effect?
That is an Ogvar thought process.
Okay, right. So, with Ogvar with his hand with Ogvar with his hand in his backpack, rummage around, he flicks open a small wooden case and pulls out one of his priest's bullets. Without a sling to launch them, he must chuck them by hand. Yeah. Yeah. Why did I throw those underpants away? So yeah, it's like a little glass vial filled with holy water. So Ogvar would like to. You're certainly not a creation of the divine Avacyn. So hopefully this will have some effect on you. And yes, see how this goes. So he'd like to chuck one of the vials of one of the priest's bullets. Sorry, yeah, at it, please.
Alora's going to mutter to herself quietly. Ah, this should be interesting.
Okay, make me a strength check, please, because that is like 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30. That's about 40 foot away. So, yeah, make me a strength check, please.
Okay. Just add my strength modifier, yep?
Yep.
It's going to be a 9 all in. 8 plus a 1.
9 all in. Okay. With a 9 all in, I'm going to say that's a no.
Okay.
It's probably this quite kind of girly pansy throw with a limp wrist, like a kind of chuck. You probably make it about halfway before the bullet hits the deck and bounces across the floor. You are going to pick me a glass. They're made of glass.
They are.
Pick me a 25% increment, please.
25 to 50, please.
25 to 50, okay. That's 66. So the priest bullet, as it hits the floor, it hits the floor once, bounces, rolls slightly, and then with an audible plink, shatters across the floor.
Okay.
Are you doing anything else on your turn?
Getting out a dustpan and brush.
Yeah. Getting out the wet floor sign.
Piso Majardo.
No, Ogvar does not want to get any closer to the thing he's scared of. So, no, you stay where he is. Thank you.
Okay. Righty-ho. So, next up we have Elora. What are you doing?
Based on watching what Ogvar's just done, she's going to attempt something. Oh no, she's not. She's too far away. How far is this sphere away from me? Is it about 100 and odd foot?
About the same as Ogvar. Should be about 40.
You're a little further back, so it's about. I don't know, where are you?
Question. I'm right the way back, near the back wall.
You are right in the back corner. That's about 100 odd foot out, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh dear. I was looking at the wrong person.
God, that was a really good idea as well.
You could send it a letter.
No.
You're that far away.
I had a really good idea. Well, I thought it was... Right, okay. She is going to... She's... What is she going to do? God, does she throw something at the sphere? Yes. I think she's going to attempt... Right, she's going to cast... She's going to wave her hand and she is going to direct her hand towards the sphere.
you got a flashing cone to go with that?
She's going to direct her hand towards the sphere, and she is going to utter the incantation Ignis. And she's going to cast Lightning Bolt on the sphere. She wants to turn it into a plasma ball.
Right, okay. So is that a roll to hit, or is it...
No, it does 9d6 of electric damage, but there is a reflex saving throw for half damage.
But it's trapped in it.
But it's trapped in the sphere, so I don't know what that does to its save, if anything.
Okay.
The DC for the reflex is 17.
Okay, let's see if it can make that. So, let's see. It makes the reflex save, so I'm going to say it can half the damage. It won't avoid it entirely, but it can half the damage.
So that would be 96. So.
Okay. Yeah. So roll your 96.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay. That's definitely a mixed bag. So 5, 8, 11, 13, 21, 26. That's 31 points of damage, which would be halved because it made the reflex save.
Yep. So 15 points of damage.
15 points of damage, yeah.
Okay, nice. Making some decent inroads. Okay, yeah, so your lightning bolt streaks out towards towards your defenestrating sphere, and it makes a solid hit, and there is a crackle of electricity. And as you watch this lightning, what colour is your lightning from your lightning bolt?
It will be almost like a neon blue, I think. Very classic neon blue.
Yeah. So this roiling mass compressed in now this 2-foot sphere is now accompanied by flashes of lightning inside, and it looks like a storm cloud in an orb. It looks like it's this really interesting effect, this roiling mass of blackness interspersed with sharp bolts of blue. And this effect lasts for a while, and you do get this kind of accompanying rumble sound, almost like you have trapped pure thunderstorm. Okay, is that the end of your turn?
No, she's going to say, oh my god, that's amazing. Look at that! Look what I just did! I did a thing! Look at that! Her voice has gone up several octaves because, well, she was... This is extremely surprising. This is a surprising new effect that she's never tried before and will likely never try again.
Okay.
So yeah, that's her done.
Nice. Otto, you're up next.
He'll speak quite clearly so everyone can hear him. You seem like good people. If you see me change, perhaps just try to stay behind and trust that I am on your side.
Change!
And he will advance to here, just stepping forward about 25 feet towards the sphere, and is readying once again to use some of his powers if he feels that he needs to.
Nice.
And that's where he will end his turn.
Okay, yes, so you advance forwards. Okay, next up, the creature. So... Laura, your spell save DC was 18, was it not?
For the
defenestrating sphere, yeah.
Sorry, just check. Yes, it was. It was 18. Yes, that's correct.
Okay, with a 17 rolled plus a 4, the creature contained within your orb thrashes. And you see the fabric of the weave of the magic containing, creating this orb shape, stretches and deforms like a film, like something pushing on a film, until it bursts. And this great blast of air, this shockwave kind of erupts, and these cobwebs, which, you know, some of these cobwebs which line the wall, they blow in the resulting wind, and you feel the wind pass through your face, and Esther's large, heavy overcoat flaps in this breeze, and it smells of ozone and sulfur. This roiling black mass enlarges. It from this compressed 2-foot sphere, it turns back into this towering, vague pillar-like cloud, effectively. And you see sparks of lightning still bouncing off of it, but it erupts back into its full form and begins to drift forwards again, moving another 20 foot into the room, encroaching into Esther, Otto, and Kewin's space. Allura, your defenestrating sphere is destroyed in the process, and you lose control.
Right, I feel that connection go.
Yeah, it's almost like a... actually, in fact, it's almost like a recoil, and you'll take 3 points of damage from the sheer recoil of feeling your spell being forcibly destroyed.
Okay.
Okay, so next up, top of the round is Esther. What does Esther have in her arsenal? Esther's going to delay her turn to just before the creature. So, Kewin, you're up next.
Kewin's gonna... Right, now you'll have to bear with me this because I've never tried this before. Kewin's gonna try and turn to see if it's an undead.
Okay, so you want to try and turn it. Okay, that's cool. So, let's find the section. Turning or rebuking undead. Okay, so, you're going to try and turn it. It's within 60 foot. Okay, so roll a turning check. So, 1d20 plus your charisma modifier.
Okay. Ah, that's six.
So, yeah, that's not great. Okay. So, I'm just going to turn it in. Yeah, okay, so you begin to pray to... So how would you like to run your turns? Do you pray? Do you drop down? Do you put your sword in front of you? How do you take up your pose for turning?
I will point my sword and pray at the creature. Pray.
Yep. Okay, so you point your sword towards this roiling mass. And as you begin to utter words of prayer and praise to Avacyn, the couple of times you've turned in the past, you feel the holy connection travel down your sword and begin to suffuse yourself. You feel the effects start to trickle down, but as it gets to the point where you would release and attempt to force this evil out of your range or try and turn it, it stutters and fails as even Avacyn's grace isn't strong enough against this foe.
Kewin will go, oh, well, that didn't go very well, first time I've used this. Okay. Well, in that case, and he's going to reach into his backpack?
Yeah, go for it, standard action, you haven't moved yet.
Yeah, and pull out his holy water.
Okay.
And he's going to take the top off, and he's going to throw it in the direction of the mist.
What,
the
whole bottle?
Okay.
Is it a bottle or vial?
It's bottles, but 1 litre.
He's throwing a 1 litre bottle at it.
I just get the image of him throwing a jerry can.
Everybody's got this thing about smashing glass tonight, haven't they?
1 litre or 1 pint. can't remember what it was.
Okay, so effects of home water. Whoops. So I want you to make a. You're within 5, 10, 50, 20. You're within 25 foot. Make me a strength check, please.
Okay. Oh, that one.
Oh no!
Oh no! You've got to be kidding me. Oh man, that is so unlucky.
Has anybody got a dustpan and brush?
So, Kewin, as you attempt to throw your vial of holy water, your bottle of holy water, you bring it right up behind your ear in a proper overhead throw. And as it kind of hits your ear mark as you go to fling it forwards, you accidentally catch the edge of your visor.
Not the visor again!
As you catch the visor comes down with a clang across your face. And being caught on the edge of the metal, your thumb is pulled backwards, which opens your palm, leaving the bottle to smash over the top of your head. And trickle sadly down your
thy
body.
Thy be anointed.
It's gone dark.
No time for a shower.
Is it raining? What's going on here? I'm all of a sudden, I'm very wet. This blasted visor. I keep getting it fixed. Nobody can fix it. Oh well, nice try.
I think they call that a skill issue.
Sorry.
That is so unlucky. Okay.
The thing is, I watched the dice roll, and it went like...
It rolled back, didn't it?
It's because you've got things...
Oh, have I?
Oh, it rolled back down the hill.
What's
it got?
It went like clunk, 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 clunk back.
If your dice tray is cocked, you can re-roll that. I'll let you re-roll that one if you're
joking.
Oh,
no, it's just too funny. It's the things that
I use for marking out the skills.
No, it's too funny.
Oh, that one. In that case, that would be 17.
17.
14
okay.
Plus 3.
You got to leave that in there. That one's going on the pod.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so that is...
I used to roll better than yours.
Yeah, so that will be enough to... That will be enough to make the distance towards this... towards this roiling mass. Yeah. However, you still need to roll me a roll to hit, please.
Right.
So that would just be your strength. Straight d20 plus strength. Yes.
Oh, I don't know.
Tell me that's an outcome.
That one.
It's your turn this week.
That's karma, that is. He genuinely had something underneath his dice tray, but it was enough to make the dice roll funny.
But you've just... I kept forgetting I pull them under there.
He couldn't write it, could you?
Oh my god. Okay, yeah.
Oh,
so
hold on. I'm going to use my luck roll.
Oh, you got a luck re-roll?
I've still got a luck re-roll.
Oh, you get... Yeah, you... Yeah. Yeah,
you actually
gave it that.
That's a 19 plus 3. That's 22.
Okay.
Oh wow.
Let's see.
God, you couldn't write it, could you?
You know what? With that sequence of events, I'm gonna give it with that sequence of events. Okay, so you toss this vial of holy water into the air. And it is this beautiful arcing throw. And you get this lovely, almost kind of slow-mo effect as the bottle with its open top spins round and a couple of droplets spray out in this very artistic Fibonacci spiral curve. The bottle flies true, landing kind of above or in the top kind of section of this roiling black mass and spraying its contents within. You hear a violent hissing sound, accompanied by a sulphurous stench, as what is the damage on that holy water, Kewin?
He's got Kevin Bacon buffer face. No, he has no clue.
I can tell you.
He's just lobbed it.
I can tell you what a priest bullet does.
Isn't it
1d4?
Yeah,
1d4, yeah.
It's a
1d4. Yeah, but
a
priest bullet is a little vial of holy water, whereas holy water is either a litre or a pint. So that'd be like.
2d4.
What was that, sorry?
2d4, I'm reading it as.
There we go, 2d4 then, Kewin.
2d4 for a priest bullet.
No, no, 1d4.
No, this is for the holy water.
No, bullets. Yeah, so holy bullets. Holy water's two.
Priest is two. Holy water's two, yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay, go on, Kewin.
Hold up. So this will be two then, okay?
2 points.
No, hold on. Three.
That's 3 points.
A two and a one.
3 points. So much better, okay. 3 points of damage. Nice.
Go, Kewin.
Okay, so is that the end of your turn now?
Yeah, I've done the rebuke and done a movement. Yeah, that'd be all I could do.
Opened and shut as well.
Okay,
he's done the whole lot there.
Yeah. Nice. Well, no, his visor would still be open. Ogvar, your turn next.
Right. Okay. So.
Follow that.
So, Ogvar, still with his hand in his rucksack, will sort of like go, oh, it's no good. He closes a little wooden case and puts his hand in a little pouch and pulls it out and sort of shakes a little pebbly thing around in his hand. And he moves up towards the next pillar. And from his position behind there, he chucks a spark stone.
Ooh, nasty. I like it. Okay, so you chuck the spark stone. You're within 15 foot. You're not going to need to make a strength check to make that toss. And let's see. Spark stones.
I can read it to you if you want. Yes, I've got it up.
Go for it. Yeah.
Do you want the full thing? These alchemical devices actually resemble fist-sized lumps of hard grey clay. You can throw a spark stone as a grenade-like weapon. When a stone hits a target, it releases a short, violent arc of electricity. A direct hit by a spark stone deals 1d6 points of electrical damage. If there is another creature within 5 feet of the target, the electrical arcs to the creature, dealing half the initial damage. The spark stone only creates one secondary arc if more than blah blah blah. In within 3 feet, randomly see which creature first. Yeah, basically there's no one else there, so we're good within 5 feet.
Yeah.
So it's chuck it and 1d6.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, you can definitely chuck that. Yeah, so it's going to land on the floor. It's going to move through the mist.
Okay.
It's going to land on the floor and explode.
Cool.
So, roll me the 1d6.
Okay. 2 points of damage.
2 points of damage.
Woo!
Okay, better than a poke in the eye.
Yeah.
Righty-ho. Are you doing anything else?
Just tutted it and, oh, I don't know what you are. It's, I'm very uncomfortable about this situation, but I do wish you'd go back from which you came.
Okay. Elora, you're up next.
Just a quick question. The 3 hit points of damage that she took from the loss of connection to her defenestrating sphere. She has false life cast, which gave her 13 extra hit points. So does it just come straight off the hit point total?
So it's the same as any other damage, so it will take off your temporary first.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, point noted. She is going to attempt. She's going to throw another lob. She was quite impressed with that blast effect, so she's going to throw another lightning bolt. Reflex save for half damage is 17.
Okay. A 19 plus 6.
Okay, so it'll be half damage this time. So she's just going to roll the 9d6.
Half damage.
Roll the 9d6.
Yep.
That's 30 points of damage halved, so that's 15 points of damage to the creature.
Nice. Okay, 15 points of damage.
She is then going to move forwards. Can she make it as far as Qin?
No. You'll be able to make it. You'll be able to make it as, you know, by the pillar behind Qin, most likely. So about 10 foot back from Qin. That'll be as far as you're able to make.
Okay. Can she give her familiar an object? Can he carry a small object? Or not really?
Yes.
Can.
Rowan will be able to carry a small object,
so,
yes.
So, if your familiar can carry a small object, if that object delivered damage upon dropping from above, in theory, if you're dropping it, he's not getting within the five... He wouldn't get within the 5 foot distance of the creature, so he would avoid the opportunity attack. Is that possible for him to drop something from height?
Yeah, you can drop something from height.
Right, so for her move action, she wants to search around in her bag, having seen what Ogvar just did, and she is going to give Rowan a moon silver shard from out of her back. Sorry, out of a backpack.
Okay.
Out of my backpack.
Some dermal piercing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But obviously she wouldn't... I'm assuming she wouldn't be able to send him off this time. That would be her movement, just to give it to her bat, because he would act next time.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that's what she's going to do. She's going to... Rowan! And very quickly, she's going to offer this moon silver shard. In fact, no, she's going to have it in her hand. She'll do that next turn.
Okay, nice. So that's the end of the turn, yeah? Okay, Otto, you're up next.
So Otto is watching everyone who has obviously decided to attack this thing. He is going to start making his way around the right-hand side of this mist, giving it only a little bit of distance between him and it. And he's decided that it's very much time to at least use some of his powers here. So as he's advancing, everyone's going to start seeing his form start to change a little.
Nice.
It seems quite painful, the sort of sounds that he's uttering. And those sounds turn from human grumbles and moans to that of a bear's roar as his form changes to that of much larger, covered in hair and sporting very large teeth and claws. And you see an enormous brown bear now stalking around this black mist, looking at it with some venom.
Nice. Okay, cool. Are you doing anything else on your turn, or is that it?
No, that would be it. He's still sporting his shining armour.
Alora is looking mildly alarmed
okay.
at this point.
Otto's a bear. Has anybody else seen that he's now a bear? Wearing armour.
There's a bear! It's a thing! There's a bear!
Hold on. Oh! I say, look. He's quite tricky, isn't he?
large, very teethy.
I think that covers 6 seconds.
Okay, so Esther's up next. Esther will turn to the nearest person, who is Qin. And she is going to cast Guidance on him. So she'll take a sidestep over him, put her hand on your shoulder, Qin. And she'll cast Guidance. You feel it, this kind of warm ripple of energy sink into your skin. You get a +1 bonus on a single attack roll, saving throw, or skill check. Okay, so then what she'll do is to kind of fill in the gap, she will take roughly a 10-foot step sideways and slightly forwards, just kind of bringing herself equidistant between Qin and Ogvar. Okay, so this black mist. As you watch, the mist begins to condense, kind of folding itself down almost, until it reaches a point where you see a vague humanoid outline. And before your eyes, this roiling smoke turns into a man. All of you can make wisdom checks for me.
Yeah, it would be a wisdom check, wouldn't it? Oh crap, but then.
Right, for Qin, that's 10 plus 1.
Ogvar's got 14 plus 1, okay. Make it a 15.
And nice. I got a 10 minus 1, which
Otto.
Is a 9, I believe.
Yeah, so it's.
Thank you very much. Laura bows.
Otto.
Otto rolled a 19 plus 5 for 24.
Brainy boy.
There we go. Okay, brightest spark of the bunch. Okay, everyone, with the exception of Laura, recognises this figure. This figure who is exactly the same as the man in the painting you found in the servants' quarters. The butler. Down to this very suit he wears. And he wears a tailored-looking black suit accompanied by a pink, light pink, kind of dusty, mushroomy pink colour silk shirt. And as he condenses into this humanoid form, he speeds towards Otto and attempts to initiate a grapple. So, let's see.
It's about to have a very, very bad time, I feel.
Quite possibly, yes.
As a silence fell across the cellar, the party began to brace themselves for the incoming wave of insubstantial billowing blackness that leached its way toward them. And if there had been a bell to toll, this would have been a good time to do so. With everyone trapped and the only exit occupied by a sinister smoke screen, there was precious little the party could do but prepare their defences. As the time came for the team to take action, the Spring Sage suddenly sprung daylight on their subject, highlighting the horror, whilst the rest rallied their courage. With Alora's sphere still in existence, she deftly manoeuvred it toward their target, enveloping it, ensnaring its essence, leaving the offender oscillating ominously in a bubble of blackness. Unsure of the consequences of such a combination, she tentatively threw electricity into the mix, leaving the cloud contorting in a cursed cauldron of energy. Ogvar bit the bullet, shortly before dropping it, as his throwing prowess was shattered whilst falling short of its target. However, the next missile he manhandled hit its mark as the sparkstone struck true. Meanwhile, the paladin paraded his warding to the best of his ability, but was unable to force the foe to flee, leaving him resorting to flinging a flask of blessed water at the incorporeal ink cloud.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Having you as a listener means everything to us. So, whichever streaming service you choose to listen to us with, please give us a like, subscribe, and follow. We would love for you to join us on our Facebook or Twitter page, where you can catch up with all of our latest news. While you're waiting for the next episode of Secrets of the Silver City, why not pop over to our website, where you can read all of the information about this campaign, from backstories to setting. All of the links are in the bio of this episode. Join us again next week for the next instalment. Thank you for listening. Thank you.